Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
Red Sox Nation, it's a kind of a family. Wherever I roam, a Fenway home, that's where I long to be. I'm a member of a Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. I fake a smile November until
good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Benny and the Bets podcast covering Boston Red Sox baseball. For everyone staying up late on Periscope, almost said SoundCloud, you can find the episode at the conclusion of this broadcast on SoundCloud as well as iTunes. You can also find it on Spreaker, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. Red Sox were a little kind of out of sequence tonight. We're in the middle of an Orioles series that was rained out, but we will mostly be covering Yankees and Indians baseball, which we just played in the last week. I was on vacation out in the Midwest, so it's kind of a catch-up show, and then we'll be back on Thursday. And then on Sunday, probably with a brand new crew for that show, Tyler and another co-host will remain with us for the midweek show from here out. So you can expect that in the future. And as always, Tyler Seeley is with us. Tyler, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good besides this god-awful rain.
Yeah, it's... fall rain isn't very pleasant, so...
No.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Hopefully it moves through. Also joining us is the editor-in-chief of UnhingedYankees.com. That is Dan Rourke, and you can find him on Twitter at Dan Allen Rourke, all together. I'm a dummy. I just totally lost my spot. But Dan, how are you? Here we go.
Doing good. Glad to be back.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember when we had you on last, but it was definitely a good show.
Before the May series in Yankee Stadium.
Okay. Then, yeah. So it was pretty early.
Oh, you mean the one David Price got his face kicked in? And is that the one you're talking about?
That was July, too.
Okay.
We'll discuss his face getting kicked in a little bit last week. A lot of excuses.
He wasn't too bad last week, actually.
Yeah, it was just the
Eduardo Nunez.
Well, yeah, he had a little Bill Buckner action I saw off of a Judge line drive. Yeah, well, let's get into that one anyway. That was a big game for David Price because his ERA is, I think, double digits and was so before that start anyway. And kind of a big game because he's been basically the best pitcher in baseball since the All-Star break. And if he were to come through in a game like that against a team that's kind of thumped him in a park that's been a house of horrors, I think a lot of people's confidence would have gone way up. But he gave up, I don't know how many earned runs, at least four or five, and I think three home runs, which a lot of Red Sox fans were quick to say, well, in Fenway Park, those are flyouts and not home runs. But he was getting hit hard one way or the other and, you know, wasn't dotting the corners of the strike zone. And Tyler, what were your expectations going into that? And then how'd you feel once he came out of the game?
Well, I'm not really a betting man, but if I was a betting man, I would have said he was going to get his face kicked in, and he basically did. So, I mean, I was right. Gave up a lot of runs, decent amount of hits. I know it wasn't as bad as the one, I believe, what was it, May? That series in May? But it was still bad. I mean, you give up, what was it, five or six runs, and then, you know, what, four home runs? It's like, it's a house of horrors for him. He can't pitch there.
And there was really no need for it because, I mean, he was cruising, like I said. So it's not like he had a few bad starts going into that and then, you know, got shelled again. He just did not come through in a big game. Dan, like when David Price gets a start in Yankee Stadium, are you like licking your chops like, oh, here we go? Like,
no, I'm not even kidding. It's such a good, and I'm not going to lie, when the Yankees play the Red Sox, I do get scared. But in terms of David Price pitching, especially when it's in Yankee Stadium, it's almost like Thanksgiving dinner. You know what I mean? Like, just you like you said, you lick your fingers at the thought of it.
Yeah, I just
I'll be honest. If I'm a Red Sox fan and I'm very, very nervous about the thought of David Price pitching against the Yankees, possibly in the ALDS, let alone a Yankee Stadium playoff game.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's been somewhat of a curse, you know, for him and certainly for us since he's been signed. He did pitch well out of the bullpen last year, but that's a bit of a different animal. The thing is, he's going to, if we want to assume it's going to be the Yankees, and I don't know how safe of an assumption that is.
It's not very safe at all.
Yeah, I mean, because, I mean, if the A's get off to a three-run first inning again, well, not again, but like the Twins did last year, I just don't know that the Yankees exactly get it right back. I mean, they can certainly mash.
One thing now is the fact that the Oakland A's are a far better team than the Twins were last year, by far, in a landslide.
Yeah.
Not to mention their bullpen, too. It could easily come, it'll probably come down to a battle of the bullpen. And if you go by bullpen ERA, the A's actually have a better ERA than them.
You're coming in a little low, Dan. I don't know if it's too far away or what.
Is this am I good now? Or?
Yeah, that's a lot better. What I was getting at, though, with Price is he's gonna start at home, which typically he's really dominant. And when he finally beat the Yankees earlier in the summer, that was a home game. And I don't know if he's gonna be the game one or two starter yet, but it's gonna be a different feel.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if you look at his postseason career ERA, it is in the fives and whatnot. And I mean, I'll be honest. I don't lick my fingers at the thought of it, like in him pitching in Fenway against the Yankees. His last time, I think it was the four game sweep. He pitched pretty well, didn't he?
Yeah, that was the start I was talking about. Yeah, I don't think he got the win because he came out with a couple of base runners on, which ended up scoring.
Yep. Yeah, that was the walk-off game, I think.
Yes, it was. The Bogarts.
Yeah.
In extra innings. But the thing, though, where he is going to be starting at home, it's going to be a different feel because not only is the local guys, you know, Pete Abraham, Rob Bradford going to be interviewing him, but Ken Rosenthal is going to be interviewing him, Buster Olney is going to be interviewing him, and all these national guys that, you know, are only there for playoff games, and that seems to be when he struggles, you know, because the gravity of the moment, I think, just gets him, and unfortunately...
That's something I was going to say for the fact that, like, it gets no secret that, like, the big moment obviously affects him, not even just looking at postseason numbers, but whenever he comes to Yankee Stadium, he cries. So, I mean, in terms of, like, if I'm a Boston fan and I'm pitching him in the ALDS against the Yankees, like, I don't really think there's any way I feel comfortable about it.
Yeah,
No, but you'd agree that you'd feel more comfortable if you're a Red Sox fan of him pitching at Fenway than at Yankee Stadium, right?
Without a doubt. I think Yankee Stadium's the main problem. I mean, to be fair, Price did get shelled in early April against the Yankees. That was the only game they won at a three-game set. But I'd say he's definitely a whole different pitcher at Fenway than Yankee Stadium.
Right. Right. So, I mean, it just, I guess, remains to be seen what's going to happen. But I'm no more comfortable with it now than I was 3 weeks ago, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I feel like that start in Yankee Stadium last week, that was kind of a chance for him to, like, maybe show the Red Sox fan base that, you know, he's actually, like, pitching his best that he has in years, and that he could, that it wasn't nerves. Maybe he's just become a better pitcher, but then
he's had that chance a lot with the Red Sox. He's had that chance a lot.
But to be fair, you would say this is definitely the best stretch he's had as a Red Sox, right?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also in that series, Erod struggled a little bit, and Hembree promptly came in and gave up a grand slam. I think two of those runs were charged to Rodriguez, so that was a pretty ugly series for the first two games, and I was away, so I'm just kind of getting updates on Twitter and on the MLB app, but I was pretty ugly about everything because I've been saying all along, you know, I felt like we are who we are in the month of September, because that's what happened last year. We sucked in September, and then we sucked in October. You know, we weren't the team. We weren't the team of April and May of 2017 by the time October came around. And I don't know what the season series is against the Yankees. I'm assuming it's fairly close.
I think you guys have about a 2 or 3-game advantage, I think.
Okay. So
I think the sweep is the advantage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Lead going into that, and then obviously you guys swept those.
Right. So we're going to come out close enough to even with the Yankees, but we lost the season series to the Indians by a game. We lost it to the Astros by a game. And those were September series.
Isn't the Red Sox playoff record record against playoff teams, isn't it 2 games under? I saw something like that, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it's under.
Right.
Music to my ears.
So, I'm just... Everybody, you see it on Twitter all the time, they've already cashed the check. You know, we're going to win the World Series. And
We'll see.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's something that actually kind of makes me salivate a little bit, is the amount of pressure that's on you guys to actually win it all this year.
Exactly, because...
Enormous amount of pressure.
I'm assuming, let's see, say we win one tomorrow at least, then that gets us to 107, and then give us at least one against the Yankees, that's 108.
I think you guys will take 2 out of 3 against the Yankees.
Well, maybe. I mean, you guys are playing for something, so who knows how Cora is going to approach that series. But just say...
Momentum in the series. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, just say 108 to 110 is realistically where we'll end up. And we're going to forever be that team until we do win the World Series. Like, we're not going to be able to talk shit to anybody. You know, the next September, if we're killing it again, they're going to be like, yeah, well, you know, 110 wins last year. You know, what'd you win?
Oh,
it's like the 2010 Phillies.
This year for you guys, that'd be devastating. Like, devastating.
Yeah. I'm just, I don't like this bullpen. Yeah.
That's,
like, I don't like this team. I got to be honest. I don't.
You guys don't really, like, embrace this team as much. Like, there's no, like, huge love behind it, especially with you. Like, I feel like a lot of people, like, aren't actually as high on this team as, like fans of a 106-win team would be, you know?
See, here's the thing. Here's the thing. Like, Red Sox fans, and I'm not saying that all of you guys out there don't watch the team on a night-to-night basis, but you're biased, right? So you see what you see record-wise. But then I look and I watch a lot of Major League Baseball. The American League blows. It blows. There's like four or five good teams in the American League. The rest of it is dog food. It is so bad.
That is true.
And so, like, the Red Sox, yes, you give them credit for beating the teams that they did. And I guess that's the difference in the division, the Red Sox and the Yankees. The Yankees lost to teams like the Rays and the Tigers and the White Sox and the Orioles. And the Red Sox beat those teams. So that's the difference. And the 110 or 112 or whatever it ends up being, it doesn't matter if you don't do anything in October. I'd take a team that wins 93 to 96 games and wins a division and wins a World Series over a team that wins 107 or whatever it ends up being and gets bounced in the first round. That's fucking embarrassing as a Red Sox fan.
Without a doubt. Especially same with the Yankees, I can say the same thing. I think this is the worst 96-win team I've ever seen. It's just because I watch every game and I see them not hitting with runners in scoring position. I see this bullpen that's supposed to be the best thing since sliced bread and, you know, impale and blow games. So it's, you know, the fan actually looks into it. You think, wow, they're lucky to even have 96 wins. And that they very well could get bounced next week in a one-game playoff and just wash it all away.
Right.
Ask yourself this, and maybe Tyler, you'll probably know it a little better, you know, being a Sox fan, but how did you feel in mid to late September 2013? Like, I knew we were going deep. I didn't know we were going to win the World Series, and I thought that the Tigers probably would beat us, but I figured we had a shot, and I don't feel that way this year.
I felt a lot better about that team than I did about this team. And the only reason being is, like, you could hang your hat on things on that team. Like, Victorino had done it with the Phillies. You know, Napoli had done it with Texas. Not that they won a World Series, but he's done it. John Lester had pitched in the postseason and had success. John Lackey had pitched in the postseason and had success. You know, you could just go down that list and there was postseason performance that one of the greatest clutch hitters of all time was on your side. You don't have that anymore.
Yeah.
So Mookie Betts blows in the postseason right now.
not a single RBI.
I'm not saying that that's going to continue because I think Mookie's a special player, as I think JD's a special player. And now we talk about X factors. JD could be an X factor. Because he's never played in the postseason with the Red Sox, and that could totally be an X factor. And, you know, that could be your quote-unquote Ortiz. Obviously, they're not the same player or anything like that. But, like I said, I felt a lot better about that 2013 team than I do about this one.
Yeah, and Mookie doesn't
have it. The bullpen was better, too, and that's another thing.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I'd say your guys' bullpen is definitely a reason to be scared.
The starting rotation scares the absolute shit out of me too. I don't understand why people are like, "Well, the bullpen scares me." The starting rotation scares the crap out of me too because you don't know what you're going to get from Price. You don't know what you're going to get from Porcello half the time. And then Sale, I mean, he wasn't very good in the postseason either. So like, there's zero to hang your hat on other than hoping that Alex Cora is, you know, a really good manager and can push every right button. And, you know, that the bullpen will you know, I guess the team will win in spite of the bullpen. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Wait, so what is your rotation line? What is it? Sale, Price, Porcello, and Moyes.
Exactly.
Is it like three-man rotation?
That's what I'm sure they'll go with. And I guess if you need a fourth guy, I mean, Erod, you could put Evaldi out there a little bit.
I think it's definitely going to be a four-man, really. You know, it'll be Sale and Price, like we know. And then I think they will put Erod and Porcello in there with guys like Wright and Evaldi on tap to go possibly long relief, because I just don't think Sale can handle the workload of a three-man rotation.
Even at least he has gotten the rest though this year.
Yeah, yeah.
And now there's built-in rest too. Just remember that in the postseason.
Mm.
You know, yeah, there's just about a day between every game.
Well, you figure what? If Sale pitches game one, he'll pitch game five, most likely, right? If you're going with the...
Yeah. Unless you need game four and you have him go on 3-4 days rest.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, the ALDS is two home for the Red Sox, two away, and then if a game five is necessary, it comes back to Fenway. But there's a day off after the first two, day off after the second two. And
I think it very well could just come down to the fact that you guys have that extra game at home, because that's home field advantage, especially with these two teams. It's crucial. The Yankees, if they can steal, I think if the Yankees can steal one of the first two games in Fenway, I think that's their key to winning it.
And you could be right. You absolutely could be right. Chris, well, Sale would only pitch game five anyway, so he's not going to pitch at Yankee Stadium. But yeah, so that's the key to me. As a Red Sox fan, I want to have a 1-0 lead in the ALDS.
That's the key.
We haven't seen that in forever.
You have to win the games that Chris Sale starts. That's a drawing line. You really got to win those games. You got to figure that. Assuming, I guess, Price will pitch game two in Boston, that he can pitch how he's pitched in the second half.
I was almost hoping that they would. I know it got leaked today that Sale was going to start game one. And I know, you know, the old baseball people will say you always go with your ace in game one. But I would argue in a 5-game series, I would pitch Price game one, because if he gets his face kicked in game one, then you got Sale game two. And if you lose that, you're probably done anyways.
Right.
Yeah, and then again, it pretty much could just be reversed. I mean, say Sale wins game one and then Price hits the bat in game two.
Yeah, it's true. But then if Sale loses and Price loses, then you're down 2-0 going back to Yankee Stadium or the Coliseum, and then it's pretty much series over.
Right. I agree with that, Tyler. Ideally, I would do it exactly that way, because I have a feeling if it is Price game two, and that's what it does look like, and then we are down 2-0. That's curtains. Because let's face it, this team does not have the mental fortitude that 2004 team did. I'm not picking on you, Dan, but I mean, we were down 0-3. It's the only time 4 in a row has ever happened by a team that was down 3-0. And this current team is not that team, and it never will be. And this rotation isn't that rotation.
This rotation isn't even the 2013 rotation.
Right.
Well, to be fair, also, I mean, like, in terms of, like, the pitching battle and whatnot, that may only be a problem for you guys come, especially the ALCS, because the Astros will outmatch you guys, in my opinion, in that department by a landslide. But in terms of the Yankees, they have their problems, too. Severino pitching in Boston, that will make me, I won't be able to sleep the night before. So that's why, in my opinion, for the Yankees, assuming if the Yankees win the wild card game, say they start half in the wild card game, I think it's not in game one, and then I go CeCe in game two. I don't want Severino pitching in Fenway. I mean, you get shelled.
Wait, all right, so let's talk about that. Who do you think's going to pitch the wild card game?
I mean, in terms of who I think and who I'd want, I think it's going to be Jay Happ, and I guess that's the right decision. It lines up right now to actually be, I think it is Jay Happ, and Tanaka, he didn't do too well his last outing, so that kind of ruined it for him a little bit. And obviously Severino's like 5 ERA in the second half. He hasn't been anything near himself, and he didn't pitch too well against Tampa Bay tonight. So I mean, I figure it'll probably be J-Hap, and then if they win that game, like I said, Tanaka will go game one.
And then Seve game two?
I'm not sure, because I'm not sure if the Yankees want to pitch. If the Yankees are comfortable with pitching, say, CC in game two, and we're a CC such a heavy bullpen day, I think they'd much rather have Severino start in Yankee Stadium for game three or four, probably, well, game three, rather than the first two in Fenway.
Yeah, and they, yeah, I mean, it, and it might depend on how game one goes as well, because they...
Maybe, but I have a feeling, because a lot of times, I know last season, and the postseason beforehand, or the last time they're in the playoffs before last year, they will lay out the rotation usually beforehand, so a lot of times we'll get the, we'll find out who's starting the first two games before it's like the first game happened.
Right, yeah. Okay, so I, if I were you guys, I would like Hap a lot in the wild card game. I mean, he's been pretty solid since he's arrived in New York, and I don't know. I don't think he's gonna rattle. And
that's the thing with Hap. I'm huge on the fact with Hap is also two reasons I'm really big on Hap starting is the mindset that he has. He's not gonna get shaken up by the crowd or playoff atmosphere or whatnot. And also, Gary Sanchez is actually starting behind the plate. J-Hap's stuff is probably the arsenal that would give him the least trouble compared to, like, Tanaka's splitter or Severino's 90-mile-an-hour slider. That's the thing. I mean, I don't think Gary will have too much of a problem with J-Hap, and that's huge.
And that's an excellent point as well. Do you expect Sanchez to get the bulk of the time, but you know,
in
catching?
The postseason?
Yeah.
Well, I know for Aaron Boone came out and said that Gary Sanchez is going to start behind the plate for the Walker game, but I mean, I think because there's always the factor with Sanchez, like, yeah, his defense is bad, but his offense should make up for it. I mean, it hasn't done that this year, but there's always like the thought and hope that'll happen. But I think the only reason he wouldn't start behind the plate, I'd say, is if something drastically bad happened. If he had a game like he had in Oakland where it was like three pass balls in the first inning, it would have to come to the point where they wouldn't start him.
Right. Yeah, and that's, you know, it's a disadvantage in the wild card because you do have to burn one of your better starters, yeah. Yeah, we either finish first or we finish last. So we haven't played a one-game wild card yet and had to really sweat that out.
Oh, thankfully.
It's the most stressful thing in the world. It's terrible. The night beforehand, it's just like, and this is also the fact where it's like last year, the Yankees were significantly a better team than the Twins. But it's one game. Literally anything can happen. Like the Orioles could beat the Yankees in a one-game playoff. I mean, they're the worst team in baseball, but it's anything can happen. It's a shootout.
Right.
And not to mention, the A's, I think, arguably are better than the Yankees right now. So.
Well, here's my fear with the A's. You guys have a really good bullpen, but so do they. And I don't think they're going to give up many runs late. And they have a lot of good situational guys, like Mengden can be pretty good for an inning or two. And then they have Kelly and Familia and then Trinan. And I don't know. And Mike Fiers shut us down. And last I checked, he's having a pretty good second half.
Oh, he's been really good with the A's. I'm pretty sure he did pretty well against us. And the thing with the A's, they show a lot of fight no matter like how much they're down by, which something about them. They have a lot of chemistry to them, too. It's like a cool story, so I don't know. I have a lot of faith in them, I guess, but it's anything can happen.
Yeah, I'm not. See, I don't know who I want. Tyler, who would you rather face if it came down to it in the ALDS?
It depends on if you're trying to say, like, if entertainment factor or like as a fan, like who I think they can beat.
Right. That's what I mean. Like who do they match the best against?
Yeah, I mean, entertainment wise, I would pick the Yankees just because of the rivalry, and you know, we haven't seen a series since 2004 between the Red Sox and the Yankees. But matchup wise, it's got to be the A's. They don't have Manaea. You know, I know they have a great bullpen, as did Cleveland 2 years ago. But I mean, I think the Red Sox rotation would outmatch the A's rotation, and I think the Red Sox lineup would probably outscore the A's lineup. depending on it, because I don't think the starting rotation for the A's is that deep. I mean, I know the bullpen is good, but I mean, if your starting rotation gets whacked around, I mean,
that's the Red thing, Sox. I mean,
right. Go ahead. Sorry.
With the A's, I mean, yeah, their bullpen's so great. Think about it. This is a 5-game series, and if it does play out to 5 games, like just because how good your bullpen is, that won't translate as much as compared to like the 1-game playoffs. So I mean, like in the A's starting rotation compared to you guys and compared to us, is I'd say significantly worse because they do rely on that bullpen heavily,
especially without Manaea.
Oh, that's a big blow. That's like a postseason changing blow. So I mean, I'll be honest. I probably, if I were you guys, I would prefer to face the Yankees. I think you guys have a better chance against the Yankees, but the A's rotation, that's a big factor in that, though.
Yeah, I think the whole entertainment factor. Especially if you love the rivalry and you know you hate the Yankees and you know you can't be without each other and stuff like that, this would be good for the future of the Red Sox Yankees rivalry. You know, another chapter in it. I mean, that's must watch TV. Even people that aren't like huge baseball fans, oh, Red Sox Yankees playoffs, you gotta watch that.
That would be one of the biggest marketing baseball events you figure since besides the Cubs World Series, probably since 2004.
Well, I mean, here's how I look at it. For whatever reason, I'm just the most uncomfortable with the A's because we haven't seen them as much. We lost 4 out of 6 games against them in the regular season. I hate how we perform out in Oakland should we have to play a game 3 or 4 out there. And they won those games against us before they really had a chance to make any upgrades. And granted, they had Manaea, you know, throw a no-hitter against us. But we also got one of our wins against Manaea. We knocked him around the second time. And so there's certain things that do make me uncomfortable. I don't think they're going to get caught up in the moment because I don't think they know any better. And with the Yankees, like you guys have been saying, there's the rivalry. And that can add several weird dynamics to the series because certain guys are going to step up that might not necessarily step up against the A's. You know, I mean, Brock Holt could have a huge game, or Brett Gardner could have a huge game against us.
And also, it could have a negative aspect too. I mean, the pressure getting to like the young kids on the Yankees, like both the Yankees and the Red Sox. And I'm not going to lie, I do sense a certain level of. I think Fenway Park does actually get into some of the Yankees' heads because they're a completely different team in Fenway Park, completely different team.
Yeah, and, you know, both teams have a distinct home field advantage against one another, you know, so I totally get that. But at least there's familiarity with both teams, and there's just a lot of unknowns against the A's in it, and it makes me uncomfortable. And I feel like the same exact thing as Cleveland in 2016 when we waltzed into that series thinking, oh, look at this injured 3-man rotation, 2 of which are just spot starters, and we're gonna kick their asses, and then before we knew it, we were swept and done, you know, and that A's rotation is probably better than that Cleveland rotation, or at least the way it was, because Bauer hadn't quite broken out yet. You know, his ERA, I think, was over 5 for the year. And, yeah, so I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Look at the National League. I mean, we're not going to get into it, but look at all the scenarios in play. There could be divisional tiebreakers.
That'll be awesome.
There could be... 3 wild card teams. There might be, you know, we saw it in I think 2013.
The play-in game, the Rays and the Indians.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
And so many.
And
crazy
we had to play the Rays. The Rays came to Fenway.
Right, and
oh, that's right. Yeah,
I wanted the Indians so bad that year, but we were a good team though. So, no, there wasn't a ton to worry about, but. But yeah, it's just crazy. I can't wait for those games to take place. And luckily for me personally, I have a lot going on that week and the weekend, and the schedule lines up perfectly because it's Friday, Saturday with an off day on Sunday. And so I won't miss any of the ALDS, but...
Hopefully they're night games instead of these stupid, dumbass 4 o'clock games.
Yeah, true. Or even, I think there might even be some 1 o'clock games during the week. If there's any...
That's brutal.
Maybe not, though, because I think...
Red Sox-Yankees, I think, would get prime time.
Oh, without a doubt.
If no, it happens, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the matchup that MLB wants to happen, is the Yankees-Red Sox.
Oh, for sure.
Of course. They would rather have it be in the ALCS it was in 2004.
MLB really has to do something about the formatting or something just to make it, like, to these matchups. Like, the Yankees-Red Sox playing the ALDS, in my opinion, that's just a crime. It should be ALCS somehow. Or like, they should be seeded differently so they could be matching up in the ALCS. I mean,
but
this still technically couldn't. No, not with this format at all, right?
No. Yeah, it literally can't happen in this format.
If we were the 2 or 3 seed on a given year, then it
could. That's right.
Yeah, right.
So it technically could.
Yeah,
it could actually.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's realistic. I mean, I don't think we're gonna win 100 games next year, really. So
you never know.
Yeah.
Also, 100 game winning seasons, no matter how good the team is, that's so hard to predict. Anyways, though, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I'd consider a 97 win year next year highly successful. You know, so.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so it'll you know we'll still see some, but you never know though either because. The last time we played in ALCS was 2004. I mean, I was 21 years old that year, and you guys were way younger than that. But
I was a little. Thank God,
I was like 8 or 9.
Yeah,
I do remember it though, like it was yesterday.
Yeah, and
I can't imagine that.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was saying that I was only 4 years old at the time, so I can't imagine. Like, thank God. if I was over the age of say 8, that would have like put me in a home or something. That would have been I wouldn't have known how to react. Like what do I do now? Like that would have been awful.
Yeah, you know, I think I've alluded to the fact that I was a corrections officer previously, and it's been a long time since I've done it, but I had just started that year, and I remember talking about the wild card race in training. And, you know, with all the other new officers and then by the time we hit the on the floor training, that was when the, ALCS was going on. So a lot of the games that I kind of saw were literally in jail, you know, because I was, you know, working there at the time. I do remember seeing game 4. Of the World Series at home, so I was off that night. But I know I was in there for game 6 and 7 of the ALCS, and it was just such a weird time in my life. But I haven't done any of that since 2007. But I don't know. And I wasn't quite the diehard Sox fan that I was that I am now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my first sport, believe it or not, was NASCAR, and and then I was a huge boxing fan, you know, through middle school and high school, and it wasn't until like all my heroes kind of retired from there, I kind of needed a new sport, and it just ended up being baseball. Yeah, probably by the time 07 came around when we won that one, I was really I was all in for sure at that point, but. Before that was mostly fair weather, you know, and I mean, I still remember a lot of the 90s too, so I can remember Carlos Quintana, you know, playing first base and Mo Vaughn eventually. And
Mo Vaughn, I love Mo Vaughn.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, anyway, let's see where we're at on time. We're not going to go too far. Yeah, so we're only at the 37-minute mark. Let's talk about Mookie Betts real quick. His stats are interesting. He's obviously, he's probably leading the league in batting average. I know he's 15 points above JD. He's got 32, 33 home runs, but only 80 RBIs. And I was hard.
He's missed some time. He's missed some time though. So I mean,
true. He
if he played the full season, he'd probably reach 100.
He could have, yeah. But also his home run to RBI ratio isn't, you know, that impressive either. But
where is he hitting the lineup though?
Lead off. That's what I was just getting at.
There you go, right there. Yeah. Don't even RBIs. To be honest, like, I'm not one of those guys that say it's completely an outdated and old school stat, but it has to be taken with a grain of salt just to where the guy's hitting.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly it. And I just don't know. I mean, you can make a case for Trout still. I mean, he's a perennial.
Oh, I'd say, in my opinion, this is not biased, maybe a little biased, I'm not sure, but in terms of if I'm debating who the MVP is, and if it's not JD Martinez, in my opinion, it should be Mike Trout. Because if you compare Trout's numbers to Betts' numbers, they're actually they're not much better, but they are better in Betts' team out of games.
Yeah, no, and that's what I'm getting at. And some people are trying to make the case for Alex Bregman as well. And
he's close in top five, but I wouldn't. Nah.
Yeah.
Who's your guys' pick? Like for MVP, if you're picking, say JD or Betts, who is it?
I would
JD
say,
without a doubt.
Yeah. He's a better hitter because he can hurt you so many different ways. You know, Mookie just drives him to left field, you know, like a typical righty, and he does very well with it, but JD uses the whole field, and I just think he's a better pure hitter, really, at this point in their careers. But unfortunately, he's mostly a DH, and there's obviously a huge bias with the voters as far as that goes.
I'm not part of that crowd. The whole like, I don't have anything against DHs. If I'm picking between Betts and JD, it's JD easily.
Yeah,
I agree.
But what I was getting at too, though, is if Mookie was hitting out of the three hole with at least Benintendi in front of him, and I don't know who the leadoff guy would have been at that point. I've always liked Bogarts in that spot, but he has kind of emerged as more of a power hitter this year versus a slappy contact hitter the previous 2 years. And the Bogarts of the previous 2 years I thought would be a great leadoff hitter. But
yep.
And even if they slotted him there right now with his, you know, with his 2018 approach, I still thought he would have been viable. And then with Bogarts and Benny hitting in front of Mookie, I think Mookie would have been an absolute lock for MVP because the RBIs would be up there, and he'd probably be at least a 31-20 guy, if not, you know, a 35-120
guy. I would say 35, yeah.
Yeah, so I just think, that's what I'm getting at here, is I think the leadoff spot really hurt him as far as that race goes.
I don't think that'll really affect the MVP case too much, for especially like the writers and all who are like even more advanced into it than we are. It's the RBIs, a lot of them, they just discount them completely, to be honest. It's getting to the point almost like how wins are discounted, not that it's that level, but like everything's relative, and also just based on your situation with your team, where you're hitting. Like you said, if Betts is hitting the three hole, he's driving in 120 compared to the however many he has right now.
Yeah, but I just think the Red Sox would have been a better team in that regard as well.
Oh yeah, haven't you? I'm pretty sure you've been going at that all season. That yeah, why he, like you don't like how he's batting lead off. I remember you tweeting that often.
I don't either.
Yeah,
most Red Sox fans don't. I've heard they don't.
It's dumb. It makes no sense.
I think
a lot of times teams will look at it, the fact that, all right, say in the case Mookie Betts is your best hitter, you have a on base percentage guy of what 440 at the top of the lineup, and him hitting leadoff will benefit him in more at bats. You could say so, more at bats to your best hitter, pretty much.
Right. Well, I guess that's the argument for it, but the argument against it is like, you know, not that many runs back, not that many RBIs. And then, you know, I guess, you know, he's got no protection at that point in time. But I guess if you put him on, then he can still hurt you with the stolen base. So I guess that's kind of a moot point. But
mm-hmm. I see each argument both ways, to be honest.
I just think Alex Cora came in and he knows that he basically has John Farrell's team with the exception of JD Martinez, and I think he wanted to kind of shake things up a bit, and Mookie did want to hit lead off, and I guess Cora was receptive of that because he thought that Mookie could kind of replicate what Springer did last year, but I just, I don't like a lot of things about how the lineup is structured. And we had Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz. We won two World Series with them hitting in the three in the four hole. And I get that analytics is a big thing now and it's changed the game. But what other team, other than the Red Sox, has two scrap heap guys hitting in on a given night the three or four spot like Moreland and Pierce do? On what team do you see that besides us?
Yeah, none.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I can't think of any.
Like, Steve Pierce is probably, in the Yankee series, going to hit fourth.
He's been good against us. Real good against us.
He is a Yankee killer, but I don't know. That's the thing. So, and when we talk about the 108, 110 wins, whatever it ends up at, this is some of what will be scrutinized if things don't go well. And then there was also Alex Cora resting guys nonstop. And, you know, we got an 8 or 9 game lead, so I guess I can't really complain, but how's that theory of resting guys going to look if we're watching the ALCS on the couch? You know?
I get the whole resting thing. It makes sense because you don't really have anything to play for and whatnot, but that could also take a player out of its groove, too. I think Paul O'Neill would go on about that he didn't like being benched down the stretch or like once they already clinched, because it would kind of it changes something mentally where like the competitiveness takes a break and then all of a sudden you're put right back into it in the postseason and it kind of messes with you.
Yeah, but I mean, Cora's been doing this all year and he does it a lot the day before an off day as well, which drives me nuts.
Boone will do that too. I know the Yankees lineup is heavily constructed by the front office and computers, but still, like, the Yankees have benched like key players like Didi Gregorius, 21-year-old Gleyber Torres for an off day, and I'm just like, what are you doing?
Right. Yeah, and speaking of Boone, he's probably going to be back next year, I would think.
Oh, yeah. My thing is that the only way he wouldn't have been back is if the Yankees somehow blew the lead for the wild card in September. I think that's the only way he wouldn't be back.
Yeah, I mean,
do you think they'd get rid of him after 1 year?
Only if that situation I just described happened. That's the only that's the only way I'd see it, to be honest.
But
I don't even know. That's the only way. I don't think it would happen because that would be such a terrible move, like optics wise, to hire or fire a man or let go a manager that just got you to the seventh game of the ALCS against the World Series champions, and then hire a new manager and then fire him within a year. That would look terrible. So I don't think they'd do it.
But also, though, Cashman took a lot of heat for bringing in a guy with no experience, especially for as long as the process was dragged out. And I think the process was dragged out because he had to make sure that Joe Girardi would not end up with the Red Sox. And once Alex Cora was hired, you know, they got rid of Girardi. But,
and also, it has a lot to do with the fact that the job of being a baseball manager has changed a lot. So in terms of what Boone's doing versus, say, what, you know, Casey Stengel was doing, is just completely different. So where it's Aaron Boone is almost like a puppet for, like, the front office, because they manipulate everything. They're the ones that are, like, getting all the numbers to put out these lineups and getting all the analytics and whatnot. So Boone's kind of just, like, I would say kind of more of a puppet than a manager. You just handle, and also he's good at handling the whole media and whatnot. He comes from that field, so I think it was an easy choice for Boone, I think.
Well, that's absolutely true, and some teams are going, like, hardcore analytics like that. I don't think the Red Sox are one of them. Like, this is Alex Cora's team, you know, not the analytics department. Mm-hmm.
I like that. I think that's so much better. It's almost like when I see Boone talking in the post-game interviews, I feel like I'm listening to a robot. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. The Dodgers.
That's how we felt with John Farrell.
Yeah, but I still think that was Farrell's team. I just think he just happened to lean heavily on analytics. But because, I mean, he shouldn't have sat Devers versus Keuchel last year. I mean, Devers was destroying lefties, and he puts in Devin Marrero to face Keuchel, who is a lefty. There was a lot that went on that made me really believe that Farrell was the guy in charge, and I think Dombrowski, as early as August, could not wait to fire that guy. And but with Boone, I mean, the Dodgers are an analytics team. I don't think Dave Roberts is really calling the shots. The Phillies have kind of taken that on. I don't think the Astros. I think they use a lot of analytics, but I think that is AJ Hinch's team. So who knows what's right and wrong? But I'd rather let the manager do it, and you know.
I totally agree. I hate the whole new age stuff.
Yeah,
I'm heavily into analytics, but in terms of, I don't want analytics completely controlling everything left and right.
Right, right. Farrell would do stupid stuff, like he wouldn't consider like how the player was doing recently. Like if, say for instance, I'm trying to use like a, say Gardner, for example, because he's been a Yankee for a while. If Matt Barnes had great numbers against Brett Gardner, but had a ERA over 6 in the last 4 weeks, he would still go to Barnes in that situation. And
no, that's ridiculous.
My mind would explode. I couldn't take that. And
I have a problem with. Go ahead.
No, you go. Go ahead.
In terms of with Boone and just the Yankees in general, they don't really believe in the hot hand for the most part. So, like, if, per se, a player who isn't an everyday player, say Greg Bird or whatnot, say he has a 3-homer game today, and then the matchups don't line up tomorrow, they won't play tomorrow. They don't believe that one game can make you hot. They don't really believe in momentum. They believe in matchups a little too much for my liking, almost to the point of absurdity that it just gets in the way, in my opinion.
I agree.
It gets ridiculous.
Yeah, and speaking of Farrell, he might interview with the Reds, which I think would be the dumbest move of all time because it's such a young team and he could not handle young talent very well.
Reds should get Girardi.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to end up somewhere, you would think.
Oh, he has to end up somewhere. That's the thing, but it all depends on, like I said, like, what the front office is like, if they're the whole new age media and whatnot, because that's a big old reason the Yankees let go of Girardi was that they felt he was going in a different direction, like with the club, and that they wanted something they can kind of control, and they didn't really think they could get that as much with Girardi.
Yeah, he wasn't gonna bow to the analytics, or at least in a way that he was uncomfortable with.
He wasn't gonna be the Yankees puppet, you know what I mean?
Right.
Exactly. I will say one thing. I think, like, not like I'm a sports fan of just about every sport. I can watch just about all of them, and hockey is, you know, my number one. I think analytics is ruining every single sport. Like, we can't just sit there and watch the game. We have to continue to critique it. And I know analytics, for some people, they love it, and I get it. But there goes up to a point where you're just going too far, I think. And I think that some of these games, especially baseball, is going in the wrong direction with analytics. I know it's important, but I think some teams just value it way, way, way too much. You guys agree?
I could not agree more. It's getting to the point where it's just like, I feel like people are so heavily into analytics that they don't count like the eye test and just like,
yeah,
like in terms of just like, I feel like they'll find it more important to go look at Fangraphs than actually watch the baseball game and like see how a player performs, or actually look into things instead of, like, I don't know, looking at all these advanced stats. And I am into advanced stats a lot, but with a grain of salt, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you have to, like, it in most sports, you have to look at the advanced stats, but then you have to, like, watch and see, can this guy play or can he not play? Exactly. It's a simple question. Can he play in the league or is he not available to, or, you know, not eligible to play in the league? Like, is he not good enough to play in the
exactly.
league?
Exactly. It's a simple question.
Can he play or can he not?
Is this guy a major leaguer? Can this guy produce at the major league level?
And then the other thing would be, you know, what kind of major leaguer is he? If he's a major leaguer, is he a superstar? Is he an all-star? Is he a role player? Is he a little bit more than a role player? Like, there's just a zillion questions. And that, to me, weighs more than the analytics.
But also, though, this is what really kills it for me. When you embrace analytics, you're discounting whether or not a player can evolve. Like,
you can't take
the first 2 years of Miguel Andujar, who's having a good year, by the way, and say that this is the player he's always going to be, and we're going to only use him in these situations. You just can't do that. Like, Travis Shaw would be a good Red Sox example. You know, it got to the point where they wouldn't let him hit lefties, and he was a platoon guy, and that's who he was under the Farrell regime. And then, you know, and then he was traded for Thornburg, which was obviously terrible, but Shaw is thriving out in Milwaukee and is going to be a cornerstone of that organization for a long time. And analytics would have killed his career if you know, Milwaukee didn't let him, you know, be the player he could be. So
yeah, I think it's just in terms of just like the whole analytical argument, it's just like, it's simple. There should just be a fair balance of the eye test, the hot hand, and then you can look into the whole analytical argument and whatnot. Because like I said, I am heavily into analytics, but with a fair dosage, of course.
You gotta be able to
differentiate, you know, with the eye test and with the analytics as well.
It's too bad that they changed the baseballs and juiced them or whatever you want to call it, because I have a feeling if that didn't happen, like 5 or 10 years from now, the stats would all be the same as they were previously. I mean, half the league is always going to suck regardless of what analytics they use, and guys are only going to be 30, 40 home run guys with maybe a few exceptions in their career. They might exceed 50, but the game will always evolve. I mean, last year it was all about the home runs. This year, I think pitchers kind of adapted and kind of, you know, took over and, you know, and kind of took the next step forward. So next year, you know, all the power hitters, you know, Mookie, Judge, Trout, all them are going to have to, you know, are going to have to readjust to the pitchers to regain the edge. And I don't know.
Yeah, the game really has changed a lot. I mean, especially like in the last decade and whatnot. And just the fact that, like, you go back to like the start of 2017. I remember Masahiro Tanaka, he was saying, I think because he had a down year last year, had like a high 4 ERA, he was saying, he's like, I'm not trying to make excuses, but the ball is just like, it feels different. They almost like it was more tightly wound, whatever it is. It just, there definitely was something up with the ball now.
Yeah, but I think that's good for the game, and I think that Major League Baseball is worried about the future of the game, so they have to make changes. Yeah, it's extremely smart.
Offense gets ratings, not pitchers. Duels, like, as much as I love them, they don't really get ratings. You look at the steroid era, why the MLB, it's like, I mean, I don't know, I'm assuming you guys know this, and not a lot of people do, is that the MLB knew about the whole steroid problem, and
of course they did.
And just, it was ratings. Like, you look at, not even just the fact of Bonds, just like everybody, home runs were skyrocketing to the point of absurdity. So, I mean,
well,
they know offense gets ratings.
That's why they're doing this. They're trying to recreate the steroids era without the steroids.
I think I'm perfectly okay with it. I don't care.
I'm okay with it. I'm fine with the ball going out of the ballpark. The only thing I will say, and you know, a lot of people will agree with this, is like, you know, there's less balls in play than ever before, and I think that that's terrifying for baseball. You know, they're three and a half hour games.
It's becoming home run or nothing. That's just
that's the problem. If there was a lot of home runs, plus there was a lot of doubles, because not only balls in play, not only does that create hits like doubles, singles, triples, maybe even inside the park home runs, but it also creates web gems, like absolutely great plays in the outfield. And and you know, errors and all kinds of stuff. And that's more entertaining than seeing a guy take 1, 2, 3, you're done, and now somebody else is coming to the plate. So I don't know what you can do.
Play, there's action.
Exactly. I don't know what you can do to change that, because the player's approach is going to have to change, because I feel like now the approach throughout the game is the same. Hit the ball out. Outs don't matter anymore. Strikeouts don't matter anymore.
They're focusing a lot on the whole, obviously, exit velocity and like line drives and all. And launch angle.
Yeah, launch angle is the big one.
Yeah, and I guess it's in terms of MLB can't really do anything about it per se. It's just going to come down to the point once, I don't know, players decided to start focusing on contact more.
Well, I guess the other thing too is players are no longer really getting paid for hitting 300. Players are getting paid to hit the ball out. You know, you pay a guy that hits 40, 45 home runs a lot more than a guy that hits, you know, 320 and only has 15 home runs.
Oh, yeah. In terms of just valuing a player, the batting average really isn't even looked at for that. I think the main stat people will go to is OPS plus, weighted runs created plus, and whatnot, and then home runs. That's pretty much it.
Right, exactly. And home runs is still obviously a big thing. But, I mean, here's the thing to me. I mean, like, I'll take a guy like Betts or a guy like Judge. Even Judge, I mean, I thought Judge was going to be a total softball player. And he does strike out a lot. But I thought he was going to be like Gallo. And I'll take a guy like Judge. I didn't think he was going to be terrible. I thought he would be like Gallo, where he'd hit the ball a mile, but he would strike out a zillion times a year.
That was literally, he was Joey Gallo in his call-up season when he played.
Right.
He had 84 bats, struck out 42 times. But with Judge, I remember I was sitting down with my brother at a diner the day before opening day of 2017, and I said to him, I was like, man, I really wish they traded Judge while his value was still high, because I think he's going to be brutal. And then, of course, he goes on to hit 54 home runs and whatnot. But the thing with Judge is that his eye has improved so much. I mean, of course, he strikes out a lot, but his on-base percentage, I mean, this year it's like just under 400. Last year it was, I think, 422.
Right.
You look at on-base percentage and his home runs, that's tells what kind of player he is.
Yeah, and then there's the whole thing too with like this whole theory of, yes, the game is getting younger, but it's also devaluing the players for their careers. Like Matt Holliday, wouldn't the Red Sox or the Yankees love to have a guy like Matt Holliday on their team right now?
Oh yeah,
I would for sure.
And that's the thing. It's like you're trying to get these older guys out of the game, but at the same time, it's like, you're going to put in a guy that has never played the major leagues before, and you're going to expect him to learn everything. But when you can just plug in a guy like Matt Holliday for, I don't know, $10 million, $12 million a year?
Less,
maybe. Yeah, maybe even less. So, I don't know. I just don't like where the game is going in that aspect as well, because I think we're going to have another offseason like we had last year, where players aren't going to be signed until March and, you know, maybe February.
What also has to do with, like, teams are finally starting to realize that signing players that are in the 30s to long-term extensions and contracts is just ridiculous.
And it isn't worth it either.
You look at the Jacoby Ellsbury's and, like, Pablo Sandoval's and stuff, it's just like, signing a player that's in their 30s to a long-term deal, it's not going to work out.
Right. I guess what teams tried to do in the 2010s and, like, you know, I guess even a little bit before that was recreate what the Yankees did, you know, in the 90s and the early 2000s, where they would pay guys. I guess even those teams were homegrown for the most part, but like, honest, you know, the 2009 Yankees was pretty much a free agent team, right?
The only team that you could really get on the Yankees about, like, a World Series championship, about, like, buying the team, quote unquote, the 2009 Yankees, they spent about $500 million that offseason on CC, AJ, Teixeira. I mean, they really unloaded the bank.
Right, but that's okay. I mean, that's the part of the game. You know, that's
and another thing
what
that's
you
different
do
now too is that back then in the early 2000s, the Yankees were always the big powerhouse. But now, teams have money to spend all around. Pretty much, it's not just a thing of like, oh, the Yankees can afford whoever they want. I mean, it's kind of it's a lot more fair of a market now than it was.
Yeah, I agree with that. Before you would have never seen a guy like Eric Hosmer sign with the San Diego Padres.
Oh, hell no.
He would have signed with the Yankees. You know? And I thought he would still end up with the Yankees because I don't know how much you guys believe in Greg Bird. But he didn't. He ended up with the Padres. And
that's changed within this season. This season's kind of been a little bit of a wake-up call. I mean, like, the Yankees were about as successful
high on them
they could be with Greg Bird. But this season, especially with the emergence of Luke Voit, Greg Bird's stock with the Yankees has definitely taken a hit.
Yeah, and he's always going to be injury-prone. But, I mean, we'll probably in the coming weeks have a lot of free agency talk. But, I mean, I don't think a lot of these guys are going to get the $400 million that they're projected to. I mean, the only reason they would is
their age, to be honest. The fact that they're 26, Machado and Harper, I mean, is then you sign them to a 10-year deal, I don't know, $40 million a year, whatever. Then, and the contract expires when they're 36, but that's pretty much is a good deal. But I think Harper will get about maybe $200 million if he does sign a long-term deal and not like a makeup 1-year deal to kind of get things right. But I think Machado would definitely be at least $300 million plus.
I don't think teams really value that, though. I mean,
it's definitely changed. Yeah.
The whole
Bryce Harper is going to get $400 or $500 million. That's overblown. That's not going to happen. That was never going to happen.
There was a point I think where it was. I think it would happen. But in the combination now of obviously the free agency market and just in general has changed, and also like the Harper's hitting $240 this year, that's just not going to happen. But
go ahead, sorry.
Machado's having a really good year. And even though the defensive analytics actually aren't too high on him at shortstop, I mean, the guy is going to be a good defender. He is a good defender.
Yeah.
Machado, you know what you're getting for the most part.
Well, the other fact, too, is like the teams now know the repercussions of spending over the luxury tax. I mean, the Red Sox didn't even want to spend over the luxury tax because then you start losing draft picks. It's not like before where it was just a slap on the wrist and you just pay the money and you're on your merry way. Now you start losing draft picks.
Exactly.
And the way you replenish your farm system is draft picks. So, I mean, it just doesn't make sense for teams to go over the luxury tax.
And if you think the Yankees have learned their lesson, I mean, like, that's a big step. Everybody's going to do it now. I mean,
the fact that the Red Sox and the Yankees probably aren't going to be players in this free agency, you're probably not going to see Harper go to the Yankees. Maybe Machado.
I think they may re-sign J. Happ, Zach Britton, and then probably go after Machado, I think. And apparently Machado badly wants to be a Yankee. So.
I think Machado, when it's all said and done, is going to end up in Philly, and I think that Bryce Harper's going to end up in Atlanta.
A lot of people are saying that Phillies are going to go after both, but there's no way you can do that, to be honest. They'd be stupid, too.
Well, their owner is stupid, though. He loves to spend money, so they probably won't, but in his mind at this very moment, he might be thinking it's possible.
You know what the Phillies could do, though? The Phillies could theoretically land Harper and Donaldson, though.
Yeah.
Donaldson, I forget.
His value is...
If you could get Donaldson, Donaldson will probably sign a 1-year deal, I figure.
Yeah, he's not going to be... Yeah. He's nowhere near the MVP guy. And
even if he was, I mean, the amount of games he played this year, you can't feel safe giving him, like, a multi-year deal at all.
Exactly. Yeah. No. It's not going to happen.
Especially like we're talking about, you know, the money isn't what it used to be. But the players still make a lot of money, but, you know, the term isn't there. The dollar is definitely still there, but the term
the years aren't because they're smart. I mean, like, you look at it like, hey, maybe Harper will get his $40 million. I don't know, but will it be over, like, 10 to 12 years? I don't think so for Harper. Machado, I think Machado will get a 10-year, at least $200 million deal, I think.
Look at it this way. This is the example I love to give. Now, assume these guys are healthy, okay, like they were at the start of their contracts, but are you a better team taking $40 million and then giving it to, let's say, Edwin Encarnacion, Mitch Moreland, and Andrew Miller. So that's a package there for $40 million. Are you better off with those three or just Bryce Harper by himself?
Well, another thing that goes into it is also obviously the player that like Harper and Machado are, but the marketing value for them is like immense. It's enormous in terms of just like tickets sold and whatnot will go up with Harper and Machado because they're stars. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, so are playoff games. I mean, those are huge money makers.
Oh, well, yeah, but like, let's not act like Harper and Machado won't make a huge impact, though. You know what I mean? And it's not like, I mean, all right, if the White Sox go sign Machado, I don't think it's going to turn him into a 91 team. But a team like the Phillies, that's like going to finish right around 500 this year, I guess, looking to take that next step because they think they're a year ahead. They go out and get a Machado or a Harper. Then I think that is crucial to their.
They were in the fight all year long.
Yeah, until about like
to the end,
start of August, pretty much, it started to falter.
Yeah.
I
actually right at 500 right now.
I'd rather have, just based on their personalities, I'd much rather have a Machado than a Harper, just because,
without a doubt, yeah.
I think Harper is just a terrible clubhouse cancer, more than the Nationals are willing to admit, because look at that Brandon Kinsler deal. He was traded to the Cubs because Mike Rizzo, the general manager of the Nationals, thought that Kinsler was a clubhouse rat and leaked a couple of minor incidents to Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports because they printed some articles, apparently, about something that went on behind the scenes with the Nationals. And then, so they make up their minds. They're like, okay, Kinsler's probably the rat. Let's just get rid of him. So he goes to Chicago. And then this becomes a story. And then Jeff Passan comes out and says, I never had any contact whatsoever with Brandon Kinsler about anything Nationals related. Yeah, and Kinsler was denying it the whole time anyway, which is probably how it did become a story. But that's the Washington Nationals clubhouse in which Bryce Harper is the central figure. So I don't want him. We're already a big enough circus as it is without Bryce Harper. So
oh yeah, think about our markets too. I mean, like anything Bryce Harper does or whatever he says, like it's magnified times two in like the Boston market, like New England market, and the New York market. You know,
it would be like having two David Prices for us.
That's he's not coming like. Here. He's not coming here. Let's just put it that way. He's not coming here, and he's not going to New York either. So we can both get that out of our.
No. I'd say there's never count the Yankees out. As smart as they've been, I guess the last couple years, I still see, think they could go after him.
No, I think if they're going to go after anyone, it's Machado. And the reason I say that they're out on Bryce Harper is because I think they went and they got their slugging outfielder last offseason.
Yeah, and also their outfield is pretty much jammed anyways for the most part. So
right.
They don't need him. The only reason, well, with Harper and the difference between Harper and Machado could come into the fact that the Yankees have a lot of right-handed heavy power, and Bryce Harper's left-handed swing in Yankee Stadium. I mean, like, I'm not going to lie, that's like salivating worthy. So it's like that and Harper. I mean, Machado's obviously a right-hander. So, I mean, I think that could come into play because the Yankees outfield is all right-handed.
What's the Yankees luxury tax situation?
Right now, I think they're 192, I believe.
And it's 197 or 196?
197, yeah.
197.
With the Red Sox, though, we're over it, and we can be over it next year as well, as long as by that next offseason, so two offseasons from now, we do get under it. We'll avoid the real serious tax penalties, yeah. But also, consider this, though. Dave Dombrowski is going to be on the hot seat if this doesn't go well. So who knows? Maybe he keeps his job, and maybe he thinks Bryce Harper might make a lot of us happy. And,
oh God!
And I'm not going to discount
that's a problem it. Problem and a half waiting.
I feel like we're probably not going to get him regardless, but that one little thing stays in the back of my mind. So.
I'd be all right with it if he came. I mean, I guess it makes the lineup better. You're not a Bryce Harper guy, though, right? I see. I like Bryce Harper.
I hate him. Yeah, I'm not saying I would burn all my Red Sox stuff if he showed up. I might like in the second season of his contract, but I don't like the guy. I don't like David Price. I'll fully admit that David Price is a talented pitcher. He's a great regular season pitcher and would probably
see,
get
I think
us...
he used to be great. I think he's over the hill now.
I'd say he's good. He's good now.
Well, yeah. I think he's adapted, though, and adapted very well. You know, not a lot of pitchers in their 30s do. I mean, I think he's 1 year younger than me, so he's going to – if he's not 34, he will be at some point this year.
Yeah, I think he's 33, yeah.
Yeah, and I just – you know, I just hate him, and I want him gone. it's like that's what it is. I want him to opt out.
He's not going to opt out, right?
You know, I don't know. I
heard he hates Boston, so I mean, maybe. I don't know.
I think it's close to 50-50 because say he chokes in the playoffs like he does, I think a lot of teams will still find...
True. That's a good point.
Yeah, the teams will still find value in his regular season work, I think, and there's nothing...
They're not anywhere close to what he's getting, though. It won't even be close.
Well, if he's willing...
No. No.
Well,
it'll be like $20 million a year, probably.
Well, that's
what's he making right now? He's making 31.
Yeah. 31. But
I don't think 20.
But like, say he does get 20, that's taking a haircut of what, $11 million a year. But then you're happy. You're more happy.
Exactly.
You can live a happier lifestyle. If you're him.
And he's already made over $200 million regardless. And I think 4 years, $25 million would be realistic. Porcello's 4 years, $20 million. So I think
I don't think Price is getting $25 million a year.
For 4 years?
I think he'd get 20, and that's a stretch. 20 is a stretch.
I don't know. I mean, well, who knows after last season's market, but I don't know. I just think, I don't know. If he hates Boston bad enough, he'll opt out.
I see, I think he'll get like 70 over 4 years, maybe, to be honest. I don't think he's getting 20. I think he's maybe getting like high teens, maybe 18, 19 million.
Well, look at it from his agent's point of view. If you're his agent,
is he a Boris client?
No, you know? I forget who it is. He does have.
No, he's not a Boris client.
It's a well known agency. It's a group that he is represented by. But
isn't he represented by Levinson Brothers, just like Lester?
Maybe.
Pretty sure he is.
Or it could be that Aces whatever group. I don't remember.
Yeah,
but
it could be that too.
But
yeah.
Look at it from the agent's point of view. If you saw a 3-something ERA and an ERA well under 2 for the second half, wouldn't you love to have a crack at an open market?
Yep.
I mean,
are you saying from Price's point of view?
No, from the agent's. Like, the agent could simply tell him, "Look, I think we could do better."
Oh no, I don't think Price can do better. Definitely not. Are you talking about his happiness
No, I'm just talking strictly from his agent's point of view, who's trying to cash in again.
Money?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think Price will get anything better. Because what does he have left? 3 years at like $30 million a year?
$31 million a year for like
it's four years. He's got $127 million remaining after this year. But
man, hell no. I don't think he's opting out, to be honest.
But
unless he's really miserable there.
But he is miserable here for sure. But I'm still talking strictly from the agent's point of view. Do you think his agent is going to tell him, "I can't do better than that. You need to stay here"? Or do you think the agent is going to get fucking horny and want to try to make a move and get another big payday?
Well, the only argument against it. And I don't mean to cut you guys off. The only argument against it, like if you're the agent, there's not a whole lot on the open market. David Price would be the best pitcher by far on the open market.
That is true. That's actually a good point.
So,
right.
So maybe a team like the Phillies says, "Oh, we got Arrieta last year. Maybe we miss out on Bryce Harper. Let's load up in the rotation. We'll give him $20 million a year. You know, for 4 or 5 more years."
Yeah, but you can't deny the fact that if a team's looking at this guy to be our ace, and they're looking to, or even to be our number two, I don't know, and they're looking, you know, as a postseason contender, like, his career postseason stats got to scare you away a little bit.
Yeah, depending I guess on a little bit.
This postseason, too. I mean, it could just come down to the postseason, to be honest, whether or not he opts out.
And if he's like lights out and we win the World Series, maybe he does. Because then, guess what? He might get that fifth year, you know, and like 5 years at $30 million. That's 150, which exceeds the you know 127 he's got left, and he gets to play in a better environment. He gets to flip us the middle finger and say, ha,
people aren't so mean to him.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But there is
people
one
guy. People don't say mean things to him.
I think Madison Bumgarner might be a free agent, though. So,
no, he's not. He has one more year left.
Oh, does he? My bad. Okay. Yeah. So Price would be.
Wait, how old is Bad Bum?
Not even 30, 20, I don't think.
29, maybe. That's it. 28, 29.
Yeah. Extremely
he's
young.
Not re-signing with the Giants. No way.
Apparently they may trade him, so.
Yeah. That's
probably their best bet, honestly.
Yeah, he's 29 right now.
They should have blown up the team probably at the start of this year rather than trade for Longoria and all these other old guys. But, yeah, well, all right. Do you want to say something else real quick?
Oh, no, I'm all good.
Okay, you can.
Should
we
bring up the Cleveland Houston series real quick?
I was gonna. I mean, because we can spend 10 minutes on this. Let's start with Dan, because who scares you the most? Say you win the wild card, you beat the Red Sox. Who scares you the most?
Oh, Houston, without a doubt. I think anybody. If I was to face any team. If I had the choice, I wouldn't want to face Houston.
They're the most complete team in baseball, probably the best team in baseball.
It's up to the fact, obviously, their starting rotation, the chemistry factor is big with me, and their offense, when it's, you know, at their, not even their peak, when they're just playing well, I think it's one of the best offenses in baseball, of course, and their bullpen can be good. And also the fact that they've been there and done that, they have the experience with it, I think that's huge. So, yeah, I'd say definitely Houston.
What do you think, Tyler?
All right, so since he said Houston, yes, Houston does scare me. They've been there, done that. There's also a thing called a World Series hangover. I think that Cleveland scares me the most because of what we seen 2 years ago and, you know, Andrew Miller. I know he's not the same guy, but now they got Brad Hand back there. That bullpen scares the absolute shit out of me. That lineup scares the shit out of me. You know, Lindor and those guys mash against the Red Sox. And so that team really that's the team that I'd be the most scared of. Now, I guess you can make an argument because Houston's rotation is insane. And so is their lineup. But, I mean, Cleveland just scares me more if I'm a Red Sox fan. Houston, I mean, we were within we're like 5 outs away from forcing a game 5 in Houston last year. So
I think the Indians might have the best rotation in the American League. I mean, I think all of them are under 3. You know, Kluber's having a great year. You know, some people.
Carrasco and Bauer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Bauer, who seemed to come back with no ill effects. I think he was on like a very limited 40-pitch.
Haven't they talked about him coming out of the bullpen?
Maybe in the divisional series, I've been wondering that, but by the end of that, he should be ready to start the ALCS should they get there. But Clevinger, you know, sub four ERA, maybe even a sub 3. Carrasco, as long as he's not facing the Red Sox, he's pretty stout. And I don't know, it could go either way. You're just picking your poison, and I get what both of you are saying. I mean, I think Houston is the most complete team, but as Tyler was saying, the Indians have also been there and done that, basically. I mean, they've gone all the way to Game 7 of a World Series. That's a pitching staff.
It's basically the same team, mind you.
Yeah, exactly. And they're, you know, they added Brad Hand and Adam Simber is also a good
Donaldson.
So Donaldson, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so yeah, it yeah. just
that
it
team's
depends.
Lineup's really good.
And
Clevinger has a 3.07 in 31 starts this year.
None of these American League managers are gonna are going to outmanage Francona.
Yeah, that's the other thing I was about to say. I know the Astros won the World Series last year, and this is going to sound bad because I think AJ Hinch seems like a wonderful guy. I don't think he's the greatest manager in the world. I think he's got a really good team with him, and I think that he pushed a lot of the right buttons last year. I don't think he's a great manager. I've watched him a lot this year during this season, and he makes some dumbass moves, I'm telling you right now. And I don't know if Francona, I'm sure, will outmanage him. I'm not sure if that will be the difference of it, but if it does come down to manager, I mean, who are you going to take, AJ Hinch or Terry Francona?
I take Francona. I think Bob...
Exactly, and that's my point.
Bob Melvin could kind of... He's a crafty guy, too, you know, and he kind of has to be with a team like that. But that's a guy who could be a headache for a lot of people, so...
With the A's, I think the A's are just like a good starting pitcher short, a good starting pitcher or two short of, like, being serious threats to win it all.
Possibly, but they have the luxury of just having a five-inning start, you know, out of most of them, and then going right to that bullpen. But
You can't rely on that bullpen every single day to, like, or at least from, like, top to bottom, at least.
Why not? Cleveland did in 2016 or 15, yeah, 2016.
Like, pitching, you can have a formula. All right, we're going to go to this guy in the sixth, seventh, eighth, or like this guy in the sixth, this guy in the seventh. You know what I mean? So, but every single game to the point where, like, I've seen it with the Yankees, that, all right, their bullpen is so good. But if you're going to them every single day with the same formula, you know, you got to rest guys. You can't keep doing the same formula every day without, like, repercussions.
Well, also, though, as of a couple weeks ago, I had a tweet which, you know, a lot of Red Sox fans didn't like, but the A's had been, up until that point, the number one offense since the All-Star break. You know, they were leading in basically every major category. And so that is a team that can score runs as well. So, I mean, if they put up five or six early, I mean, that's... their pitching staff isn't terrible. Like, they're not going to give that up necessarily. So there's so many things you have to factor in here, but they do obviously have to win the wild card game at Yankee Stadium first, probably against J Happ, which isn't anything I'd want to be faced with. So
yeah,
you know,
I'd love to see. I don't mean to cut you guys off. I would love to see that game be at the Coliseum. Just selfishly, because
I wouldn't sleep tonight. I'd be petrified. Oh God, the thought of it gives me stomach pains right now.
I don't want to play game. There. That makes me want to root for the Yankees in that game, because I don't even want to play in the Coliseum.
I don't know why the thought of the open Coliseum, especially when the A's are playing well, it's just like, I think it scares me. I think it is hell. I don't know why.
It probably has ghosts in there that haunt the shit out of people. It
frustrates me. I'm like, oh God, please.
I'll just think back to 2003. We'll be fine.
Yeah. All right. We're pushing it on time, so we're gonna wrap. But appreciate you guys coming on, and Tyler, we'll figure out Thursday.
Yep.
You know, I can probably come up with a plan B if I have to. All right. So thanks again, and. Dan, they can find you on unhingedyankees.com.
Yep.
And then also on Twitter at Dan Allen Rourke, all one word. That'll be yeah. Tagged in the tweet, like I said. So, all right. So thanks again, and have a good night, guys.
Yep, you too.
It's fun.
Finally, we recorded a new show, episode 82 in the books. We will be back on Thursday to maybe talk about the Orioles. I mean, not that it really matters, but also we might know a little bit more about the playoff situation. The third base area is still a little unsettled. Devers kind of making a case. We didn't really talk about that tonight, but we'll get into that stuff and more on the Thursday show, which will have a new permanent co-host. So that will be announced tomorrow evening, so tune in for that. And yeah, Have a good night.
That's where I long to be. I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. LeafHome.com/water.